Wuthering Heights, newly adapted for Drama on 3, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.
And that's here on BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. And you can also listen to us live online. 1 o'clock is the time. The news now read by John Shea.
Libya's deputy foreign minister has confirmed that government forces have pulled out of the eastern town of Ashdabia. He blamed the retreat on the coalition's airstrikes, accusing the international force of directly helping the rebels. Government tanks and artillery were found destroyed or abandoned. The rebels have been celebrating recapturing the town, the first gain they've made since the no-fly zone was imposed. President Obama says the international mission in Libya is succeeding. He said Libyan air defences had been destroyed and that countless civilian lives had been saved. The authorities in Syria are reported to have released a substantial number of political prisoners. A London-based human rights group said most of those freed were being held in a prison in the capital, Damascus. Thousands of protesters are marching through central London to demonstrate against government cuts. The TUC had been expecting 100,000 people, but it now says the numbers are much higher. The Labour leader Ed Miliband is due to address a rally in Hyde Park. He is expected to tell the demonstrators that they speak for the mainstream of Britain. Detectives who arrested a man in connection with the murder of Sean O'Callaghan have been given more time to question him. The body of the 22-year-old woman, who was last seen leaving a nightclub in Swindon last weekend, was found in Oxfordshire on Thursday. Nearly 150,000 pensioners faced demands for hundreds of pounds in uncollected tax. HM Revenue and Customs failed to take account of the state pension when it sent out some tax codes for the current year. The Revenue says it has no power to write off the £130 million it's owed as a result. Officials in Japan are trying to allay fears about high levels of radioactive iodine found in the sea near the Fukushima nuclear plant. They said the contamination would soon be diluted and was unlikely to enter the food chain. And the weather. There'll be sunny spells with the odd shower in places in southern England. Heavier rain is expected in northeastern Scotland and perhaps northeastern England, where it will feel colder than in recent days. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at 2:30 past one.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, now on Radio 3, the first of this weekend's early music shows. It'll be introduced by Lucy Skeeping after this motet from 16th century France.
Thank you. pages of a well-known music encyclopedia, sandwiched between the Philharmusica of London and a strange brass instrument called the Phonicon, you find the name Fino. Dominique Fino, to be precise. Just three short paragraphs are devoted to him, and the few facts there are mostly sprinkled with words like probably, it's thought, or might have, which is a shame because Monsieur Fino was a composer who left us with quite a bit of rather nice music. And if you can't hear it on the early music show, well, where else? We began just now with Fino's setting of Sanctorum Omnium, performed by the BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill. And they're a game lot, because when my producer decided that today was going to be Fino's early music show moment, he asked them to prepare some music specially for the programme, all pieces they'd never seen before. A quick rummage in the archives, and in no time at all, the tape recorders were turning, or at least the digital equivalent. And hey presto, one of the best choirs in the land was suddenly bringing Fino back to life. It was a real voyage of discovery for the BBC Singers, they told us, and I hope for you as well. But before we start exploring the Fino fact file in depth, such as it is, let's whet our appetites with another of his motets. This is an eight-part setting of the Latin text O Sacrum Convivium, written by St. Thomas Aquinas. O sacred banquet at which Christ is consumed, the memory of his passion is recalled, our souls are filled with grace.
Thank you.
Dominique Fino's eight-voice motet, O Sacrum Convivium, performed there by the BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill. So we know very little about Fino, not even when he was born, although the general consensus is it was around 1510, when Henry VIII had just come to the throne, and over in Rome, Michelangelo was applying his first brushstrokes to the Sistine Chapel ceiling. And talking of Italy, there's evidence that Fino spent some time there in the mid-1540s, both the court and the cathedral in Urbino, just south of Venice, where some of his music was published. And he seems to have been well known enough there to come to the attention of one of the great brains of the age, the Italian mathematician Girolamo Cardano, who, in one of his many learned tomes, described Fino as Gallus. Which makes sense, because Fino made several settings of French poetry, witty and occasionally salacious chansons that we're going to be hearing later in the programme. So yes, he probably was a Frenchman. Most of Fino's surviving works are for the church, a couple of masses, a handful of magnificats, and almost 100 motets, mostly for five voices, two of which we're going to hear now. They're particularly joyous in mood. All the parts are equal in importance. As you'll hear, he doesn't give the singers much time for a breather. Laetatis Sum comes from Psalm 22, and the English translation might be more familiar as the coronation anthem, I Was Glad. First, though, a setting of a much less well-known Latin text, taken from John chapter 14. Let not your heart be troubled. I will pray to the Father and go and prepare a place for you.
Thank you.
The BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill, into 5-part motets by Dominique Fino. First you heard Non Turbetur, the words taken from John chapter 14, and the second, a setting of the psalm Laetatus Sum, I was glad when they said unto me. We don't hear much about Fino these days, but during his lifetime, back in the 16th century, he was obviously a man who made his mark. His music was widely distributed and he was praised by many of his contemporaries, like the Italian theorist Pietro Cheroni, who called him one of the first and best composers of the time. Had there been no Fino, he wrote, perhaps somewhat extravagantly, Palestrina's music would not have been possible, which was quite something, considering Palestrina was, of course, the great musician of the Renaissance. Even in Germany, Fino seems to have made his presence felt. The composer Heinrich Finck ranked him up there with three of the most celebrated composers of the time, Thomas Crecchion, Nicholas Gombert and Clemens Nonpapa. And given that Finck died when Fino was still just 20 years old, Fino's talents must have been impressive quite early on. So as we've heard, by the 1540s, several of his compositions had been published in Venice. And a couple of years later, we find a publisher in Lyon had taken him on as well, printing 4 volumes of his music. These included some of his most outstanding sacred pieces. Remarkable because he wrote them for a double choir, which is quite an innovative thing to have done. Some 60 years later, Giovanni Gabrielli was to make his name doing exactly the same thing in Venice, dividing up the choir and positioning them on opposite sides of St. Mark's so that the sound kind of bounced from one side to the other in a sort of stereo effect. But, well, it does look as if Fino actually got there first. Here are the BBC Singers with Fino's 8-part motet. It's a setting of a text from the Gospel according to St. John. Iam non dicam.
Thank you.
now on, I would not call you servants, but my friends, for a servant does not know what his lord might do. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my father I have made known to you. The eight-voice motet Iam Non Dicam by Dominique Fino, performed there by the BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. Fino appears to have had some connection with the city of Lyon. There's no evidence he was ever a permanent resident, but his music was published there, as we've heard, and many of his pieces were dedicated to prominent citizens. And the texts of some of his chansons were penned by local poets, and they deal with subjects of local interest. And we're going to hear three of those chansons now, all of them taken from one of those Lyonnaise collections of the late 1540s. The middle one's very short, a song about a girl called Linotte. And after that, a longer song, Adieu, Loise. But to start the set, a sweet little ditty about a young girl off to pay a visit to her curate.
Les cuisses se rendent et la mort.
Adieu Loise, the last of three chansons by Dominique Fino, published in Lyon in 1548. And they were performed there by the BBC Singers, conducted by David Hill in a recording made specially for the early music show. The bulk of Fino's music, though, as with most composers of this period, was for the church. And it's infuriating that we don't know where most of it was written or for whom, because I was... feel that knowing the context does help you understand old music so much better. But I guess we'll just have to content ourselves with snippets, name checks here and there from his contemporaries and the odd comment from the next generation of musicians, people like Palestrina and Orlando Lassus, who both acknowledged their debt to Fino. We heard an example of his five-part music at the beginning of the programme and just before those three French chansons, one of his motets for double choir. But this next piece is a bit different, a really beautiful six-part setting of Sustinuimus Pacem. We wait for peace and it fails to come. We seek what is good and behold confusion. We acknowledge our sins, O Lord, forget us not for ever. sinned and have committed iniquity and have done wickedly. The closing words of Dominic Fino's six-part motet, Sustinuemus Pacem, performed there by the BBC singers, conducted by David Hill. So I've tried to piece together some of the surviving information about Fino's life, what his contemporaries thought of him, where his music got published, and one or two places where he's known to have worked, or where his name's on the payroll at least. But when it comes to his death, well, we may just be onto something. You remember that wise old mathematician Girolamo Cardano I mentioned earlier, who described Fino as gallus? Well, he also hints in his writings, and it's backed up by other sources as well, that Fino was executed for homosexual practices. That's actually a bit of a shock. It was in Lyon, he says, and sadly, it wasn't unusual at the time. Renaissance France, like the rest of the Christian world in this period, was totally freaked out by so-called unnatural practices, and anyone found guilty of them was beheaded and burnt. If that really was the horrible fate that befell Dominic Fino, then I guess that may at least partly explain why he's been out of mind for so long. But not forgotten, thanks to the BBC singers who, I must say, threw themselves into the search for the elusive Fino with as much enthusiasm as anyone here on the Early Music Show team. And they're going to sing us out, as we say, with one of Fino's longest and most enduring works, his Lamentations of the Prophet Jeremiah, another of those clever double choir pieces we heard earlier. They were reprinted time and time again during the 16th century, and they demonstrate just why Fino, one of the most important composers of Renaissance polyphony, is well overdue for a proper revival. So go on, spread the word.
The BBC singers there, conducted by David Hill, with that eight-part setting of The Lamentations of Jeremiah by Dominique Finot. And it ends today's early music show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. On tomorrow's programme, Catherine Bott will be looking at some of the female composers active in medieval Europe, including Hildegard of Bingen and the women troubadours. That's at the usual time tomorrow, just after the 1 o'clock news.
Naima Yerby and the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, a partnership that stretches back over the decades. Yerby returns to Scotland to conduct the orchestra in Performance on Three, a concert which includes a Shostakovich symphony dedicated to the city where Yerby learnt his craft, Leningrad. Monday night's Performance on Three from 7 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
And Shostakovich right now, as it happens, Shostakovich on a smaller scale. This is another chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert, which was broadcast live on Monday from London's Wigmore Hall. Four musicians representing something of a golden age of the Moscow Conservatoire. They're the Koppelman Quartet, who all graduated from there in the 1970s but didn't come together again until 9 years ago. Among them are former members of the Bardin Quartet and former members of the distinguished Moscow Virtuosi. There's Shostakovich in a moment, and then after it in this concert, in complete contrast, Brahms, A minor quartet, Opus 51, number 2. First, though, the Shostakovich. This fourth string quartet comes between his 9th and 10th symphonies. It was written in 1949. But in the wake of Stalin's administration's assault on creative spirit the previous year, the premiere was postponed. In fact, the music didn't see the light of day until after Stalin's death. His hatred of music for music's sake, of which chamber music was a chief culprit, would almost certainly have got Shostakovich into trouble with the Kremlin. Also, with anti-Semitism rife in the Soviet Union, this quartet's kinship with the folk music of the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe would have spelled trouble too. "Jews became a symbol for me," wrote Shostakovich. "All of man's defencelessness was concentrated in them." So here it is, Shostakovich's string quartet number 4, played by the Koppelman Quartet.